Welcome to Recovery Radio by Landmark Recovery with your host, Zach Crouch. In this program, we'll discuss the root causes and treatments of alcohol and substance addiction, speak with experts in related fields, and help navigate the road to recovery. Now, here's the host of Recovery Radio, Zach Crouch.
I'm your host, Zach Crouch. Today's episode discusses topics that could be triggering, including sexual abuse, physical abuse, and suicide. I'd encourage our listeners to proceed with discretion. But our guest today is going to share her message of healing and hope. It's really important. So if you are in an abusive situation, you can also visit thehotline.org. That's thehotline.org. Or you can call 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-SAFE. If you're having suicidal thoughts, visit the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline or call 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-TALK. So it's an unfortunate reality that one in three or 30% of women worldwide have been subjected to either physical or sexual violence in their lifetime. This is according to a 2021 World Health Organization finding. In the United States alone, every minute an American is sexually assaulted. In every 9 minutes, that victim is a child. This data is from the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network. That's the nation's largest anti-sexual violence organization. So that's the hard data. On a personal level, it's very likely that someone you know has been a victim of abuse. Our guest today, Gina Rokowski, is a survivor herself. Gina is a former elementary school teacher and parent educator turned trauma coach. She's also the founder of Bridge to Breakthroughs, a faith-based mentoring and coaching program for women who have experienced sexual abuse, whether in childhood or as adults. Gina's approach to helping women heal from their trauma focuses on transforming the way they see themselves. She does this by combining social, emotional intelligence strategies, brain science, and research around transforming trauma into triumph and purpose. Love that. The steps reflected in her Bridge to Breakthroughs program personally helped Gina overcome her own shame, fear, and self-hatred caused by past trauma. As a survivor of chronic sexual childhood abuse, Gina found herself in abusive relationship patterns and struggled with drug addiction, even surviving multiple suicide attempts. Through trauma-informed therapy, brain-based strategies, and finding herself through her faith, Gina recently celebrated 18 years of sobriety and mental wellness. Gina, congratulations on that. I'm going to begin with two quotes from Gina to frame our discussion. The first is, you don't have to relive the trauma in order to heal from it. It's really important. I'm going to read that again. You don't have to relive the trauma in order to heal from it. The second, healing childhood shame cannot be accomplished with things. We'll put things in quotations there because no amount of money, cars, or mansions can overcome the power of shame. Unless consciously acknowledged, shame steadily and consistently increases in intensity and frequency. Gina, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Zach.
So I want to go back to the quote that at least one of the quotes that I just mentioned. So, you know, the second one particularly spoke to me a little bit. Healing childhood shame cannot be accomplished with things because no amount of money, cars, mansions, et cetera, can overcome the power of shame, right? Unless consciously acknowledged, shame steadily and consistently increases in intensity and frequency. Why is that? That the intensity and frequency of the shame just increases when we don't acknowledge it?
Well, I think one reason is you can really go back to some real basics when it comes to healing from trauma. And that's based on the science and the book from Professor Vanderkolk called The Body Keeps the Score. Mm-hmm. And you know, when, you know, basically anxiety and, you know, shame, you know, what happens when you are dealing with shame is, you know, your body's keeping the score. So you're going to experience anxiety, you're going to experience panic, because your body is literally going, you know, please keep me safe, please keep me safe. Everything's in danger. You know, your body does, all your body knows is that it has been programmed to stay on high alert. And so when you're feeling shame, you don't feel safe, you don't feel loved. So your body is just constantly going, please resolve this, please see this, please resolve this. And if we don't pay attention to that, then it just gets louder and louder. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, if you think about it, you know, I mean, this is a really lame metaphor, but the point is, you know, if you're like calling for somebody's attention and you're just like, you know, hey, you're like over here, you know, and they don't hear you, you know, you're like, okay, if there's a fire, you're going to be like, yo, you know what I mean? Oh, my, over here, you know, and then you're just screaming, like I said, there's a fire, right? And so your body is going, excuse me, but like we're on fire here, you know, everything's a danger and you feel like crap and you can't go out there because every time you do, you get hurt. And so the body and the nervous system just stay on in this alert, you know, this constant state of alert. And the struggle with that is that, you know, that puts you into the part of your brain where it's the brainstem where all you can do is survive. You know, that's not where you learn, it's not where you've developed flexibility, it's not where you can, you know, transform or think, you know, it's literally survival and you're just like on this thing. So the idea of, you know, anxiety and shame, you know, shame increasing is basically because if we don't recognize it, it, you know, it just gets bigger and bigger. You know, it's just like if you light a match, it's a small little light, right? But if you, you know, put it on a pile of hay, you know, it's just going to explode, you know, and it just gets bigger and bigger. Until we can acknowledge it and then, you know, offer it what it really needs.
It's so, I don't know what the word is. I guess it makes sense as it relates back to your first quote, which was you do not have to relive the trauma in order to heal from it. That said, what happens though, where people who have had trauma, what they do is they continue to relive those pieces, those things that, you know, happen, right? Because what they want is resolution. So they go back to, you know, the sort of the scene of the crime, right?
Right.
Where it happened,
right.
When it happened. And they don't get resolved. And
they just get repeated.
Yeah. I'm curious from that perspective, you know, number one, you don't have to relive the trauma in order to heal from it. Well, how do you heal from it then?
Well, I mean, that's a really good question, Zach. And I think that's something that, you know, a lot of people don't really understand, you know, and it's part of the reason why people hesitate to approach healing from trauma. But, you know, just to give you a little bit of a background, like one of the things that I do with clients and things that I've done myself, you know, in my own group therapy that, you know, I continue to this day, you know, we don't get in there and start swapping war stories. You know what I mean? That literally just re-traumatizes you. You know, what, you know, the best way to heal from trauma is really to learn to like recognize some of the things that, you know, you might not know that can really normalize, you know, why you do what you do or why you feel how you feel, you know, and then you can deal with learning how to relate to yourself and to, you know, to God a little bit, you know, better so that you're not, you know, you don't have this relationship with yourself that's so awful that you can't even, you know, relate to yourself. Because most of the time when you've been through trauma, you're dissociating, you know, things are so awful inside, you know, in your body, in your spirit, you know, you're just so awful that you just dissociate. So, you know, you don't even want to be yourself. So the trick is really, you know, the key really is not to go in and like, let me tell you how awful it was and all these horrible things, but to deal with the core issues of like, you know, shame, fear, anxiety, you know, how do you deal with the feelings? How do you calm the body down? You know, how do you, you know, the cause of shame is a lack of unconditional love. Okay. So if there's a place to find unconditional love and build a relationship on that, you can heal that. And that's why, you know, the piece of having a relationship with God in recovery is so important. I think that's why you see that in AA. It's why you see it in ACA and the 12-step programs, you know, because you just can't heal shame without having some relationship that is based on unconditional love, because that's what causes shame, is a lack of that. And so when you work towards healing, you know, finding a way to love, you know, yourself, be loved by God, dealing with, you know, how do I calm my body? You know, how do I put in place, you know, ways to communicate with people you know, you're really retraining your body, your mind, and your spirit, and learning new ways of acting and being in the world, as opposed to just operating from survival. So that's really the way, you know, you want to kind of heal from. And then that's why, like, things like experiential therapy and psychodrama and things like that are so important, because they actually help you to not just move from knowing it, but to experiencing the change. Does that make sense?
Sure. It does. And your background is this compilation of unique perspectives, where mm-hmm. you've been an elementary school teacher, a parent educator, a trauma coach. Mm-hmm. And we've all heard the concept of our inner child, right? But
right.
I'm curious about how this, from your perspective, as it relates to trauma in children and adults. I don't want to really force something that isn't there, but what connections have you made between your work with kids as a school teacher and your work with adults as a trauma coach?
I mean, I have to say it's so incredibly remarkable to me, Zach, how much what I learned with my kids as a teacher, you know, how what I learned in how to, you know, teach them and discipline them and relate to them, it can be so incredibly just like moved right over into adults and to learning how to interact with your inner child. And it's funny because I just wrote a blog recently about how reparenting and how important that is. And, you know, one of the things I talked about is how in the heck are you supposed to like reparent yourself when you didn't maybe even have a parent who was, you know, parenting, they were abusing, they were traumatizing, right? And so like one of the things I learned when working with my kids was, you know, I took a very intentional approach to working with my students. And I spent several years working on learning how to incorporate, you know, discipline that was based on social emotional learning. And that included like attachment, attunement, community building, you know, eye contact, safe touch, you know, really teaching them what they could do, you know, having a safe place in my classroom, teaching them how to breathe, teaching them about the brain. And in learning to actually connect with them, it actually helped transform my own nervous system and helped me to be able to use some of those very same tactics with my inner child, you know. Yeah. And it's funny, you know, like I was at the gym yesterday and, you know, it's not my favorite place to be. I go because it's good for me, but I don't like it. And I literally have, you know, had to say to my, you know, there was a part of me that was just feeling like, oh, you know, I don't like being in front of all these people. And I was able to like really say to my inner child in that moment, I see you, I got you, you're safe here with me. It's okay. Nobody cares. I see you. And then, you know, I just went back to doing my thing. And it's, you know, and all of a sudden the anxiety's not there. It's just fine because I'm literally meeting her needs. But I think really learning how to interact and relate to our inner child is so important for healing from trauma, because that's the part of us that was, you know, taught that you're unworthy, you're unlovable, you're incapable. And in order to be able to see that and say, I see you, right? You know, then you're not like seeking somebody else to give you that assurance. But it's absolutely amazing to me how much of a parallel, you know, and even things that I do in my own, you know, with my own clients and my own business now, is a lot of the things I did with my students, I do with them. Because the greatest thing I think about healing from trauma is, to me, is it does not have to be horrible and heavy. You know, there can be a playful element. I mean, I've got doodles in my office that, you know, I've posted online that, you know, really have helped me connect with my inner child and see her differently, so that I understand that she did what she did to survive. There's nothing I can, how can I be ashamed of her trying to survive? I may not like the way she did it, but that's all she knew, right?
I'm curious to know and hear more about that piece that you just mentioned about having this conversation with your inner child. Mm-hmm. What do you say to people who really probably aren't convinced that having this conversation is really going to have an impact with that, I guess, smaller version of ourselves?
Right. I mean, I think one of the first things that, I mean, there's no doubt, Zach, that, you know, healing from trauma definitely requires some, you know, vulnerability, because, you know, I think the big, you know, I know for me personally, and this is what I would say to other people, it's very difficult to face the part of you that you think is embarrassing, shameful, you know, you don't want to even acknowledge. You know, like I said earlier, for the longest time, I didn't even want to be a self. And I think it's really important, especially to talk to people who are like, you know, really kind of doubting this and feeling uncomfortable about this, is to really share, you know, my own story of doing this, you know, how I felt in that experience, you know, helping normalize the discomfort around it really can make it a lot more palpable for other people. You know, I mean, there were, in the very beginning, this was probably 10 years ago or more, wasn't even able to really work with my inner child the way I can today. I actually had a doll that a therapist suggested. And I thought, you know what, I can do it with the doll. I just couldn't do it with myself. But I got this doll, and I mean, I just, you know, I did things with her that I did with my students. I did a little I Love You rituals. I got a little blanket for her. And it was really weird, but I started to be able to, like, connect to this thing outside of me before I was able to connect to the part of me inside. And I think, too, the other thing is to realize that the things that you're ashamed of about this child, or this, and, you know, the other thing is there's this fear behind acknowledging the inner child, that what you're going to find out, and this is not the case with me, is that, oh my God, she is unlovable. She is unworthy. She's just a loser, you know, and there's this, like, oh my God, if I really acknowledge her, maybe I'm going to find that out. But there's nothing that could be further from the truth. And I think that's why it's so important to have a spiritual aspect, you know, building a relationship with God in a recovery program, you know, of any kind, because that is where the unconditional love comes in. But, you know, it is definitely does take a element of vulnerability. But I think, too, helping you see the similarities between you and another person who might be doubting this, you know, it helps them to know, like, you're not alone. I've been there. This is what it feels like. So hopefully sharing some of that and explaining that, you know, what we're ashamed of lots of times is literally the things we did to survive. And that's part of that inner child, you know, whether, you know, it's like, you know, screaming, bullying, kicking, sleeping around, you know, whatever the things are that you might think of this little child as embarrassing. When you can look at her with compassion and say, here's this child who all she wanted to do was be loved and cared for. And she didn't know what to do, right? Or he didn't know what to do. You know, we learn by watching our caregivers. And if they scream and they drink and they do drugs and they ignore and they put down, that's what we learn to do, because that's just the way our brain works. So if we can go, well, that's all I learned to do. Now I can learn something new. It kind of normalizes it. It takes away the sting of, like, oh my God, I'm going to find out I'm just a crazy loser. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. And one of the things that was coming up for me as you were talking, a question really is, I know that you work primarily with women. What about, what have you noticed, or colleagues that you've spoken with, if any, have you noticed in terms of differences between men and women in terms of the messaging that goes on to that inner child?
Well, you know, I have to say, having even been in group therapy myself and you know, with other, you know, with men, and the message is the same, because we're all human. You know, it's not like if I'm a man or if I'm a female or what, you know, whatever I am, it isn't like all of a sudden my need changes, right? Because we're basically dealing with the need at hand, and the need at hand doesn't change as a human being. You know, we need safety. We need unconditional love. We need encouragement, we need empathy, we need empowerment, you know, and, you know, maybe, you know, let's just say, for example, you know, I'm dealing with a guy and he's a real, you know, he's more like a sports person. You know, I'm personally a big sports fan, like go Eagles, but they suck this year, but that's beside the point. But, you know, I might say, hey, you know, let's talk about, you know, using the power of your imagination to, like, take your inner child to a baseball game, or go outside and play fetch with them, or, you know what I mean? But, you know, it's really about building a relationship with that child, you know, based on the premise of these, you know, these unconditional love, you know, things that just don't change based on gender of any kind. And then learning how to build that relationship. It's just like being married, you know what I mean? Not all married people do the same thing when they go out on a date, or, you know, people who are dating, right? So you really just learn to, like, have this relationship that's different. You know, and I may, you know, talk to mine, you know, one way. You may, you know, decide to, like, you know, create a little safe place, or talk to her one way, or, you know, go outside and play ball or something. But it's really just about learning to just start to relate to that part of us.
I'm curious, and I want to be clear when I ask this question too. Mm-hmm. The internal messaging that many women have versus that, you know, men have when they are early on in their life, they kind of have, I think men do maybe more of a difficulty cultivating that vulnerability piece because of the cultural messages that men internalize early on in their life. It doesn't mean that the work is any less hard for men or women, but have you found it to be true that for a lot of guys, a lot of men, that it's just like they can't get past like this idea that it's okay to be vulnerable and
I mean, there's no doubt that there's a challenge about that. I would, you know, totally agree with that fact. I would say that, I mean, it really is, I mean, it's funny because, there is like this macho, you know, tough guy kind of thing out there. And yet now and more, like you'll find, you know, men on social media or, you know, wherever you can, you know, online and things like that, where they're talking more openly about, you know, being vulnerable or, you know, experiencing, you know, sharing your own story. And I think it's really important to, you know, I would say, especially to men who are struggling, to, you know, seek out some other, you know, other people or, you know, other connections, you know, on social media or like through Landmark or something like that, you know, to see that they're not alone, that there's something incredibly strong about being vulnerable. And even when you think about like historical figures in the past who we look at as like heroes, they had to be very, very vulnerable to do some of the things that they did. And there's no doubt that there is, like I said, a macho kind of, you know, you've got to be the provider and the strong one and all. And I do think that that's definitely a challenge. I wouldn't say that, you know, obviously the message and the need is any different, but I would certainly say that I think it's important, you know, it's part of the reason why I think, you know, would I, you know, should a male come along and say, hey, I'd like to work with you. I would never say no. You know what I mean? My clients are primarily women, but I do think that it's important for men to have space for learning to be vulnerable and heal. But I do think that, yes, especially with the stuff, you know, you see on TV, you know, and the things you see in the movies, it's all tough guy. But, you know, that's just to make a quick buck, not to change somebody's life, right?
So when we reached out to you about coming on to the podcast, you mentioned that you found very few addiction recovery programs that actually address recovering from childhood trauma and abuse. Talk to us a little bit about why addressing, you know, those kinds of traumas, I would say in a safe and science-informed setting, is important.
I think it's important because when it comes to addiction, you know, alcoholism, pills, sex, whatever it is, it's not, you know, isn't really about the behavior. It's really about the need that's causing the behavior. You know, when it comes to, you know, drinking or taking pills, I mean, obviously the trauma was so bad in my life and I didn't even know what it was about, that, you know, I was just taking Klonopin and Xanax and Percocet and all sorts of things. But I think it's really important to address childhood trauma, because if we don't address the issues that cause the addiction, we're just going to find other ways of either, I mean, you can be sober and still repeat really crappy relationships. Right. You know, you can be sober and still be, you know, kind of an asshole. I hate to say it like that, but you get the point. And I think, you know, when you really look at the issue at hand, you know, I'm like, yes, like I was abused and I was traumatized. And what does that mean about myself and my self-belief? Then you can actually realize, like, right, for example, now I know how to regulate my nervous system. Now I know how to, you know, to calm my body, mind, and spirit so that I'm not overly anxious and can't control myself to the point that I'm seeking outside relief, right? But if we can really deal with the core reasons behind that.
I want to ask you a quick question. Just, you brought up a really great point, and I want to unpack this really briefly. So when you mentioned the piece around doing the work, right?
Right.
What did you believe about yourself and the abuse before you chose to do?
Oh God. Yeah. Let's see. I mean, I really thought that I was crazy. Like, I will say, and I mean this with all sincerity, having been in the psych ward 3 times, tried to kill myself. I mean, my biggest fear for so long was that I really believed that I was just going to find out that everything I thought other people thought about me was true. You know, and I really, you know, I thought that I was just a loser. I thought I was crazy. I hated myself. I couldn't look in the mirror. I mean, and it's funny, way, way, way deep down inside, there was a part of me that was like, no, I don't think that's really true. But everything in my life demonstrated and almost proved those fears. So, I mean, I just believed that I was worthless. I was unlovable. Nobody cared about me. It was horrible to be me for so long.
Sure. Appreciate you sharing that, because I think there's probably quite a few people out there who feel very similarly to that.
Yeah.
And yeah. Have had the opportunity to step into the work. So, you know, going back to this idea though, about how addressing the trauma in these safe settings is so important though. Right. What happens when people don't work on this stuff, you know, when they don't have the opportunity to process through some of this stuff?
Well, it's funny. One of the things I learned about the brain, Jack, is the brain is pattern seeking, right? I mean, it's funny because just to go back to one of the first questions you asked me about being a teacher, one of the very first things, I mean, every single year that I taught kindergarten, first, second grade, the first thing I ever taught in math was patterns, teaching the kids how to know and identify patterns. And it's, you know, the brain is the same way. It seeks patterns. It knows this. So what happens is, if you don't resolve that trauma, you are going to repeat it because it's all that you know. And it's very, it's like an unconscious, you know, I mean, just to give you an example, you know, having been through sexual abuse with my father, I married an abusive man. I still continued to get into relationships after that were not fulfilling in any way, that were no good for me. There was no reciprocal, you know, self, you know, any kind of really love of any kind. And, you know, one of the things the therapist who I was seeing at the time told me was, if you really want to break the pattern of this, you're going to have to start going out with somebody that you wouldn't be normally attracted to. You're going to have to, like, start a new pattern. And it's, I swear, honest to God, it's the only reason I went out with my husband, who had been with 14 years or more now. And I only did it because I was like, I'm going to go out with him just to show her. I'm going to, you know, I mean, I had no interest in going out with him at all. In fact, I blew him off the first time he asked me out and told him I was seeing somebody else. And I didn't like his picture. And I was just like, oh God, no, this is a no. Like, this is no all over the place. I can't tell you how different my life has been with him because of how safely and unconditionally loved I am with him. And I think, you know, when you don't address the trauma, you're going to repeat it because it's all that you know. It's literally like asking yourself, well, if you don't know how to learn to write with your left hand, why do you keep writing with your right hand? I mean, it's just the way the brain works. Like, you're not going to learn to write with your left hand if you keep writing with your right. And if your right is really causing you to, like, hurt yourself, then you have to learn something new. Does that make sense?
It does. And I'm curious, as it relates back to your husband, what sort of opportunity do you think you gave yourself, or a better word, what might be, is what gift did you give yourself by going out with him?
Oh gosh. I mean, I will say, I don't think I ever really knew what it could be like to be with someone who really and truly, you know, loves me. And I don't mean like enables me, but I mean, you know, who will call me out on my bullshit, you know, who will build me up when I need, you know, who is, and I would say the biggest thing that I have gotten from him is a husband who is willing to learn how to do things differently. You know, like, how can we communicate better? And I've actually have had trauma therapists tell me that they really believe the only reason that my memories of being sexually abused came back when they did was because I was with my husband and I was safe. And had I not been in a safe relationship, I don't think my body would have been able to calm down enough to remember those things. And if I hadn't remembered them, I wouldn't be where I am today.
Wow. Wow. Well,
pretty deep stuff sometimes.
Yeah. you know, you bring up, I think, some really important things too. One of those, as you just pointed out, as a survivor of sexual abuse as a kid, I think that you have this truly empathetic understanding of your clients. Would you mind sharing with, you know, your journey with us from the realities of addiction and mental health to finding healing and hope? And I think it builds on what you just talked about with your husband.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if I start at the very beginning, you know, I was 14 years old when I started having seizures, and I had seizures for 20 years. And many times people, you know, a lot of the doctors thought at the time they were epileptic seizures. We know now they were most likely dissociative. But, you know, not knowing how to function in the world and to the point where my body had to, like, shut me down, you know, I ended up, you know, just to kind of go through the timeline of it, you know, by the time I was 19, I was pregnant and unmarried. I had had brain surgery that, you know, was just, that's another story. You know, and that, thank God they didn't follow through up with what they were going to do with that. But, you know, then I ended up, you know, in the psych ward for the first time. You know, and the next time, you know, the doctors start putting me on drugs, you know, mm-hmm. Klonopin, Xanax, Ambien, you know, and then the next thing you know, I'm in an accident, I get pain pills, and, you know, I still have issues and go in the hospital for, you know, psych ward, and, you know, at one point my mother almost institutionalized me. But, you know, I got addicted to those drugs, not realizing, you know, that was actually happening. And I think that's kind of important to point out. I can remember looking at our medicine cabinet back and going, I think these are addictive drugs. I wonder how you know if you're addicted. I mean, I had no idea that, like, simply by becoming dependent on them and not, you know, and your body builds up resistance, this is actually what's happening. And when I had my, my final suicide attempt in 2003, at the time that my mother was dying, they put me in the hospital again, put me in the psych ward, and it was the first time I was diagnosed with PTSD. Mm-hmm. After all those years, and I was like 37 or something. And finally having that diagnosis really helped, you know, they got me in touch with a really good trauma-informed therapist who helped me go, you know, inpatient to an inpatient program for that. And at the time, I still didn't remember the sexual abuse growing up, so I was dealing with the abuse of, like, my ex-husband. But, you know, after that time, in order to go inpatient, I had to get off the drugs. Mm-hmm. And so they detoxed me, you know, upstairs and put me on Valium so I didn't have a heart attack. And, you know, I went through the withdrawal, which was, like, horrible for years. But it was really, you know, after that time period, the thing was, I still started, you know, I was still dealing with the impact of this sexual abuse and trauma growing up and shame that I didn't know. And so I was still repeating, like, old patterns. And so I wasn't able to, you know, I had trouble keeping some of my teaching jobs, and really yeah. struggled with that until the flashback started in 11 years ago of the sexual abuse growing up. And I just thought to myself, my God, I've been in recovery all this time, and now it's almost like I have to restart. Mm-hmm. You know, and thank God I was able to get a really, really good experiential trauma-informed therapist who could really help me work through that. And on top of that, I also went way back to my spiritual roots of, going back and spending more time with God, which is, you know, something I did when I was in AA, and I was, like, leading, you know, third step and 11th step meetings. And I was doing that, you know, before, you know, when my seizures had stopped and things like that. So I really was kind of forced in a way. And I sometimes think God, like, forced me to, like, get back to what I really needed to learn and experience in order to heal from all of this. And when I did that, I started having the transformation of realizing that, you know, who I, you know, I started learning that I'm not unlovable, you know, I'm, you know, these are the things that happened to me. And like I said earlier, normalizing some of those things, you know, when you can speak to somebody who can really speak to, you know, the brain and how that works, and you start understanding that everything that you're happening, that's happening, you're experiencing, is very normal for what you went through. And I actually had a therapist tell me at one time, you cannot deal with abnormal situations the way you would normal ones. So, like, when you're dealing with sexual abuse and you're dealing with the impact, you can't just say to somebody, well, like, walk away and get over it. You know, it right. just doesn't work that way, you know. But having a chance to really you know, go deep into my work about healing from trauma was really the key that helped me to actually stop feeling, you know, started feeling free from the anxiety, started feeling free from shame. I mean, I was just amazed at how much better I felt about myself after doing that work. Excuse me.
Oh, I want to ask you a question, and I think that this has been sort of a theme throughout our conversation today, and you brought it up several times about the importance of the relationship with God, right? And you mentioned the word transformation too, and that is something I think, did that happen over the course of weeks, months, years for you? And why was God such a centerpiece for you and all that?
You know, it's funny. I mean, actually, I had to stop and think about that. That's a really good question, because I would, at the time, I would have said, "Oh, this is taking forever," right? When I look back on it, I think there was a bit of a turning point when I really started spending time with God. And I had actually hired a business coach who I thought, you know, she was also a very spiritual Christian woman. And I just hired her as business. And we ended up actually, she ended up helping me really nurture my relationship with God instead of helping me with my business. But the more time that I actually spent being with God and like making him very personal, the more, like, I really have to say, I was absolutely amazed at the amount, the significant decrease that I felt in anxiety and shame. I mean, it was, you know, to the point where I go to my group therapy, you know, and I'm really gung-ho on my own self-care about maintaining my recovery. And I've been in this group for a good year or so. And some, you know, I was started to do this every day. And, you know, my group leader and my groups were like, what's going on with you? Like, you're so much more calm. And I said, you know, I've actually been doing my soaking prayer every day. I mean, I literally just like put on the soft music and lay with God. And I have to say that it's absolutely amazing how much calmer I started feeling and how I started realizing, like, I literally started making God super duper personal. And I used to say this when I would lead like 11 step meetings. And it's funny because I kind of got away from that. Like, this was like 2004, I'm leading these meetings about God. And then I literally went in the other direction and went, I don't know, I'm like recovered. I'm like so great. I'm going to go do all these things. And I sought all this validation and like, oh, I'm not crazy now. Like, I have a career and all that. And I still hadn't resolved all this. So like all these years later, I come back to this and I start realizing that, well, who am I? You know, like, what is my purpose? And I realized that, you know, who I am is God's child. And if God loves me unconditionally, then it doesn't matter what happened to me. I mean, right, if you think about it, they put Jesus on a cross. Does that make him like a loser? You know what I mean? No. A lot of heroes in the world have been assassinated, right? It doesn't matter. Like, who I am is, you know, a loved, unconditionally loved child of God. And that will never change. And so that, having that relationship, I mean, I literally would like close my eyes and picture God and me like walking on the beach. And I'd be like, you know what? You can't wear that goofy toga thing. Like, you got to put on some jeans and a t-shirt, like roll up your jeans and let's go for a walk. And the more personal I made God, the more he was relatable to me. Does that make sense?
Sure. And,
you know, the more I could receive his gift.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, the things that come up for me are these two words, really, freedom and perspective for your life, right? And those two, do those two speak pretty true to you, like, today? And how have things been different, you know, if you even look back like a year or 5 years from now when you were maybe not as involved with this relationship with
right.
Some people say higher power, you choose to say God, you know,
right,
whatever,
right.
Whatever it's called.
I mean, I will say this much about that fact is like, I notice now when I need to, like, when I'm slacking on that, on really nurturing that relationship, like, I'll start to get anxious and I'll be like, oh man, I've been rushing to the gym in the morning instead of spending, you know, more time, you know, and so I'll do something. But I really can tell a difference in, like, you know, when you ask me about freedom, when I start to feel like I'm shackled, like I'm anxious or I'm not free, I would say I can tell for sure that I literally will just like shut it down and go lay down with God, or I'll go for a walk with him or whatever it is. But I really could say that if I look back on my life a year or 5 years ago, had I not nurtured this, and because, you know, the other thing too, Zach, is like we're body, mind, and spirit, and there's a whole, you know, crap ton of stuff out there for mind, mindfulness, mindset, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of stuff out there for the body, right? But like, how much is it there for our spirit? And I really think like when we can get in touch with our spirit and know like who is our spirit, like what is our spirit? It's made in the image and likeness of God. It's God's child. It's God's creation. Like all of a sudden you're dealing with the whole three parts of you. And so I would just say that I can't, it's almost like now my body lets me know when it's gone in, away from spending time with God. You know, and it's kind of like, think about it like this, like your stomach starts to rumble when you get hungry and you're like, oh, I guess I better go to the refrigerator or eat something, right? And now I can pay more attention to my body and go, oh man, I feel like crap, I'm scared, I'm whatever it is, and at least find some relief in what God has to offer me.
Love it. Gina, thank you so much for joining us on the Recovery Radio podcast. Well,
thank you so much for having me, Zach. I hope to God that I inspired other people out there to let them know that they're not crazy, not lunatics, not unlovable, and there's absolutely hope. Like, if you do the work, it will be amazing.
You can learn more about Gina and her Bridge to Breakthroughs program by visiting her at ginarolkowski.com. That's ginarolkowski.com. You can also find her on Instagram, LinkedIn, and Pinterest. And again, if you're in an abusive situation, you can please visit thehotline.org or call 1-800-799-SAFE. If you're having suicidal thoughts, visit the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline online or call 1-800-273-TALK. That's 800-273-TALK. And at Landmark Recovery, we work to address your needs as it relates to drug and alcohol substance use and abuse, as well as co-occurring disorders. We are not just treating addiction, we are treating the challenges that lead to addiction. Our clinicians specialize in evidence-based addiction treatment, and something unique to us is that we offer double the amount of therapy hours compared to the national average. If you're ready to live beyond your addictions, check us out online at landmarkrecovery.com, as well as on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Catch you all next week. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for tuning in to Recovery Radio. New content for this program is available every Tuesday at 12 noon Eastern Time and 9 a.m. Pacific Time, with all episodes available on demand on the Voice America Health and Wellness channel and through our content partners, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Play Podcasts. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and review so we can continue to create quality content to help save 1 million lives in the next 100 years. You don't need to struggle through addiction alone. Live the life you dreamed on the road to recovery.